CTBK is more than just a full-service accounting firm. They are one team with an innovative approach to accounting and rise to each new challenge with collaborative problem-solving skills. CTBK goes above and beyond by lending helping hands in the Buffalo and Niagara community through volunteer work and donations, and is partnered up with Victory Sports for 2020 and 2021 to keep kids in the community active. The professionals at CTBK are determined to help individuals and businesses succeed. Whether a large corporation, a small business, or somewhere in between, call CTBK at 716-630-2400. Again, 716-630-2400, and see what CTBK's one-team approach can do for you.
Welcome to Tim Graham and Friends, brought to you by CTBK, CPAs and Business Consultants. I'm Tim Graham of The Athletic, here with Jonah Bronstein of Bronstein Sports Plus. You know, it's been a little while since we've spoken about Bronstein Sports Plus. Any new mergers or acquisitions that CTBK has been helping you with?
There's some exciting stuff in the works that maybe we can't announce now, but, you know, rest assured that Bronstein Sports Plus is a growing enterprise and will soon be bigger than you know, bigger than you can envision now.
That's exciting. And a belated happy birthday, Jonah.
Thank you. Oh, also, and this will be a bit of breaking news here. We're selling 25% of Bronstein Sports Plus and taking bids on that. So anybody that wants to get in on the ground floor of a growing media entity, private equity, or any firms like that, they can contact Tim and he'll put you in touch with me.
Are you using CTBK for that?
Yeah, actually, they can contact CTBK as well to sift through whether the offers are serious and if you have the financial wherewithal to be a adequate partner. If you don't, you won't really get past that screening process.
And of course, to sign the non-disclosure agreements.
I can't talk about that.
You will not be using Allen and Company. They are preoccupied with the sale of a chunk of the Buffalo Bills, a story that I broke earlier today at The Athletic. The Pegula family has enlisted Allen and Company to sell roughly 25% based on what I've been told. And it might not be exactly 25%, could be a little bit more, could be a little bit less, could be nothing at all. This is something that Terry Pegula hasn't committed to beyond hiring the firm Allen and Company based in Lakeland, Florida, to sell this chunk of the team. And it's newsworthy because it's the first time Terry Pegula has gone outside any of his sports teams for a minority partner. The Sabres and the Bandits and the Amerks are not for sale. They're not a part of this. The Rochester Nighthawks, which the Pegulas also own, have been for sale for a while as a separate bid or as a separate property. The Pegula is already owners of the Bandits. They don't want two NLL teams. They were essentially helping out the National Lacrosse League by stabilizing the Rochester market, but it looks like the Nighthawks might be on their way out, perhaps in a relocation or whatever. But anyways, they lose money, and the Pegulas are selling the Nighthawks. And then learned late last night that they are finally interested in selling a piece of the Bills. So it's really, it's increasingly rare for sole ownership of an NFL team because the valuations are skyrocketing. The implications for estate taxes, Terry Pegula is in his 70s. His wife, Kim, has been sidelined because of her medical condition. And so she is not involved with the teams anymore. And so there's a interest in liquidity here. And if the Bills, I think the rough valuation that is used for a team like the Bills, let's say $4 billion, and you're going to sell 25% of that, give or take, then you're looking at liquidity for an owner who also has concerns with this new stadium, because the Pagulas are on the hook for any overruns. The stadium was originally estimated to cost $1.4 billion, with the state committing $600 million and Erie County committing $250 million. Those numbers are capped. The Pagulas pay the rest. And the latest stadium estimate has been $1.7 billion, with a lot of industry experts who I've talked to over the months insisting to me that it will probably end up costing around $2 billion. So there are all kinds of reasons why Terry Pegula would be finally willing to sell off a limited partnership. He'll have controlling interest. He'll retain ownership of the Bills. He'll have final say on everything. It's significant from a sports business standpoint.
Do we know if the yacht is for sale and what percentage that is?
No, I haven't heard about the super yacht in some time. You know, there's always been the rumor that the Sabres are for sale. And I'm repeatedly told by people who would know, executives at the time who are no longer with the Bills, the list is long, or Pagula Sports and Entertainment, going back to Russ Brandon or Ron Rakuya or John Roth, all these people have always insisted the Sabres are not for sale. And there was a report on Twitter from an independent journalist who I had not heard of before, but it gained some traction, who was reporting that the Pagulas were selling off everything but the Bills. Turned out to be the opposite. The Bills, in their statement to me, while confirming they had hired Allen and Company to explore this sale of a portion of the Bills, in that statement said nothing else is for sale. So again, that's just to reiterate what the team is saying regarding the Sabres and the Amerks and the Bandits. And of course, we know from my tweet yesterday, I had already mentioned that the Nighthawks are for sale. So anyway, that's the thumbnail of where the Bills or the Pagula sports ownership portfolio stands in terms of the comings and goings. What was your general thought, Jonah, when you heard that that Terry Pagula is willing to sell a quarter of the team?
Well, you did answer some of the questions that I had at first, which is what does it mean for all the other properties that Pagula owns and the real estate, and whether this is selling 25% of the empire of the Pagula Sports and Entertainment conglomerate, which has been disbanded, but seems like it could be brought together maybe in a business deal like that. In reading your story, so one thing that interests me and I want to ask you a bit more about, because I remember, I don't know if anybody else remembers this, I remember having a conversation with yourself and John Warrow on this podcast when John Roth was hired. And I just kind of spitballed a little bit that it looked to me like a hire that would precede a selling a piece of the team to private equity, because that's a growing trend in other leagues and professional sports, and especially with some of these teams, especially in the
not
NBA,
in the NFL yet, but it's close to happening. It's close.
Well, that's
to,
what I
in fact, maybe within the next couple of months, private equity.
What I wanted to ask your expertise or your knowledge from your reporting here, because it was shot down pretty quickly when I raised that issue in the past by yourself and John, saying that, you know, Terry Pagula has never been interested in having partners. And I think you might have mentioned that that was not allowable at the NFL, but I did read in your story this afternoon that that rule could change, and perhaps the Bills are maybe a trial balloon in getting, you know, that business.
Well, I'm glad you asked that, because this is not a private equity situation. Now, of course, it's not allowed. It could be allowed, however, before a transaction could take place. So private equity could enter the mix here regarding the 25% ownership. I keep using it again. I'm saying 25%. That's not concrete. That's just a rough working figure in terms of how much the Pagulas are believed to be looking to get. And based on how the valuations work out, that 25%, from what I've been told, is kind of a backed in number. So if the valuation comes up different, it could end up being 20%, could end up being 30%, could be 10%. I don't know. But anyways, it's roughly what the discussions that are being had are in the ballpark at 25%. So the NBA, the NHL, and Major League Baseball all allow private equity ownership. And what that is a faceless organization can buy a chunk of a team, and it's a silent owner. They have no say because it's a business. It's not really people, but it's people who invest in this private equity, and that they get to own a piece, but they're not, it's all on paper. And it's a way for an owner to get some liquidity, to sell a piece of the team. And then, of course, this private equity is investing on the almost sure bet, at least as historically speaking, almost sure bet that a team is going to gain value. Sports leagues, it's one of the safest bets out there. Of course, you know, Terry Pegula bought the Bills for $1.4 billion. It was a record. At the time, that record has since been shattered by the Carolina Panthers and then the Denver Broncos and then most recently the Washington Commanders at $6.05 billion. So, of course, Washington is a bigger market team and a blue blood organization, and the Bills are one of the smallest markets in the NFL, et cetera, et cetera. But still, there's no doubt that the value over the last decade has risen dramatically regarding the Bills, the advent of the gambling revenue streams, the broadcast deals. You can see it in the salary cap, the revenue sharing that is done. Their money is all over the place. And I'm saying it's a machine. It's a money-making machine, the NFL. And so Forbes, in their most recent valuations of NFL teams, had the Bills at about $4 billion. And the average NFL team at $5.1 billion. So we're talking about such an increase in the valuation of the Bills, and companies are going to come in and look under the hood, companies representing any potential investment, somebody who wants to come in as a limited partner, and they're going to look at the books and they're going to come up with their valuation. And they're going to talk to Allen and company and broker deal. So this isn't, again, to put a bow on the private equity thing, that could happen at the next owners meeting, which is in May. They could vote to approve it. If not May, then the next meeting after that, I believe, is in October. And so they're probably not going to hold a special session to vote on private equity. So we're still talking at a sometime down the road that could get into be in the mix. But as of now, individuals, you know, or groups of actual people are talking to the Pegulas about buying this percentage of the Buffalo Bills. And we could get into a private equity situation based on the timing of it. However quick this goes, or if it stalls, we might be looking at a private equity situation down the road.
And then I think the biggest question for a Buffalo sports fan, when any type of this news even is rumored and leaked out, you know, is the anxiety of it. You know, the Pegulas buying the Bills, it seemed, at least on the surface, kept the Bills in Buffalo, prevented another owner from buying them that could have moved them to another city. Maybe wasn't the same exact situation with the Sabres, but there's strains of that in Sabres ownership and anxiety about whether that team could get sold. You know, with the Pegulas listening and taking offers on parts of this franchise, how much could that lead to any insecurity of either of these teams, of any of these teams, and Bandits included, not being in Buffalo any longer?
Well, as of now, I think that's nil. But anybody who is going to buy a significant portion of an NFL team and spend upwards of $1.5 billion to get 25% of a sports franchise, you're going to want to know what you're dealing with, and you're going to want certain things in your deal. These limited partnerships often are stepping stones to future ownership. There are a lot of NFL owners who were limited partners with another team, or you may even have a situation that gets negotiated where there's right of first refusal. You know, they're going to want to maybe come in and say, okay, Terry, if you decide to sell down the road, I want first refusal to buy the other 75%. You know, that's how Michael Jordan, I think, became owner of the Bobcats. I don't know if they were the Hornets at the time, but there are ownership groups that have done that. And So those things are all going to be negotiated as part of this deal. So could the person or group that buys this 25%, this theoretical 25%, going to be the future owner of the Bills? Perhaps. But as it stands now, what that's not what Terry Pegula wants. Terry Pegula wants controlling interest. He wants it to remain in the family. And, you know, 75% is still a large, large stake. And no doubt controlling ownership status. But everything's probably on the table to as far as this incoming person or group is. They're going to want to be able to negotiate all kinds of things. Will Terry Pegula agree to them? My guess is he's going to probably be try to be as strict as possible regarding what he's willing to give up. He's going to want to, you know, this is his team. And he's going to want it to remain his team and perhaps be passed down to his children.
Do you have any sense, as you mentioned at the top, that the Sabres are not involved in this deal, or at least these details that you're reporting today, but the rumors have been persistent about the Sabres being for sale? Where do you think that is right now as to whether whether the Sabres are for sale, or a piece of the Sabres, or not for sale, or where that's going in the future?
I'm told they're absolutely not for sale, not even, and let's play out all the word games, you know, because I had some tweets yesterday in which I, you know, it turned into semantics and I ended up having a tweet that was not entirely accurate because I was dealing with semantics with one of my sources regarding the Pegula sports portfolio. But I'm told in no uncertain terms, not only are the Sabres not for sale, a portion of them is not for sale. It's not a percentage thing. It's not like word games or semantics, that 0% of the Sabres are for sale. And the same goes for the Amerks and the Bandits. That's all I can tell you is what my sources are telling me regarding that. Now, that could also change too. Maybe Terry Pegula does this deal for the Bills and decides, you know what, that's not so bad. This doesn't hurt my pride. I can get away with doing the same thing with the Sabres and still have same ownership and get a little more cash and use that cash on whatever, you know, for his teams or for his personal use or whatever, to reinvest in the organization on infrastructure or whether it be the building or the hockey operations department, or well, I don't know what. So there's obviously could change his mind just as he did with his decision to sell a piece of the Bills. But as of now, I'm told that the Sabres are absolutely not for sale in whole or in part. Anything else that's lingering regarding this before I know we need to,
we both
have a weird schedule today and we need to keep the podcast on the shorter side, but I also don't want to leave any glaring omissions.
Well, I just want to ask real quick. We talked about this regarding the Sabres and their coaching change the other day, that it was coincidental, but maybe not at all connected that, you know, Don Granato got fired and those coaching changes were made in Pete Guelly's first week on the job. This big business deal that you would think, you know, the COO would be very involved with, is that another coincidence of timing? How much did some of these old COOs, do you think, lay the groundwork for something like this in the past?
I would say, yeah, I think it's a coincidence because these things have been in the works for a while. The Bills didn't just hire Allen and Company yesterday. And I also was not meant to learn these things. It wasn't like, you know, sometimes as a journalist, you are informed of certain things when the timing is right, or when the person wants you to know about it, or the team wants you to know about it. Safe to say the Bills did not want me to know that they are selling a piece of their team and had hired a company to broker the deal. That is something that I found out that was inconvenient and turned into a matter that needed to be addressed today at One Bills Drive. So I think it's coincidence. You know, I don't think that it's, you know, Pete Guelly started on Monday or Tuesday, whatever it was, and he implemented something that within 3 or 4 days had gotten to the point where there's documents and non-disclosure agreements.
Yeah, and if you want to move on, I just want to pat you on the back, first of all, or before we do that, for breaking this story and something to peel back the curtain a little bit. You know, it was a packed media room at the Bills access period yesterday with the first week of workouts and pre-draft, and you couldn't get a seat in the media room. You weren't there yet. You know, you had other things to deal with. And it's an interesting, I think, journalism access lesson in how all of us that were there closer to the scene, you know, weren't able to get, you know, really even a sniff on this story. And you back in the home office were able to lap the field with it.
Well, thank you for saying that. But again, the football side and the business side are two totally different beats. I wouldn't suspect the story usually gets broken by the person who covers the X's and O's and the players and the coaches and all that stuff. It's usually done by a business reporter. And in Buffalo, thankfully, that's something that I've had the pleasure of being able to do. Maybe sometimes pleasure with finger quotes. But as somebody who covered a lockout in the NHL, an ownership change in the of the Sabres, a team that went, I was covering the Sabres when the Reguses got arrested. So a team that was plunged into bankruptcy, had to be sold. I was not in town when Tom Golisano bought the team, I don't think, or bought the Sabres, I'm talking about. And then when I was covering the Miami Dolphins, Wayne Huizenga sold that team. I then covered Ralph Wilson's death and that the sale of that team to the Pegulas, and then a stadium. And there's just been, I have a lot of sources, and it's been interesting, and it's been a blessing that I've been able to cover some of this stuff. Really short on time, your thoughts, Jonah. You were there yesterday at One Bills Drive. It was media access for the first time since the Stephon Diggs trade. Josh Allen spoke, Sean McDermott spoke. We had heard previously from Brandon Bean on the day of the trade. He spoke again, mostly about the draft, but it was voluntary workouts, mini camp, or I should say, no, that's not, mini camp is usually mandatory. What's the phrase we're working on? Voluntary workouts,
yeah,
whatever the hell it was.
It's the OTAs, but they're
OTAs, right? OTA organized workouts. Team activities. Yeah, I avoid that phrase with the plague. I always hate it. I always just called them voluntary workouts because that exactly says what they are. OTAs, I think the reader sometimes has to stop and think, okay, now what's that again? Which one's this? Do they have to be here? Do they not have to be here?
Yeah, and there's two different types of OTAs. There's these, and then there's the voluntary minicamp type practices. And really what they're doing now is a lot more just off-season conditioning. I think there's some field work in limited ways with the players among themselves, but it's not with the pads on out there,
right?
You know, 11 on 11, 7 on 7, anything like that.
What were your takeaways from the news conferences yesterday? Let's just stay with Josh Allen. First time we've heard from Josh Allen since the end of the season.
I think Josh Allen and Sean McDermott were similar in that they were asked many questions in many ways about Stephon Diggs and took the high road and said nice things. And I think there was a high level of sincerity in the things that Josh Allen and Sean McDermott said about the totality of the four-year experience with Stephon Diggs. And for most of the time, appreciating Stephon Diggs, the person and the player, and what he brought to the Bills, especially earlier on. And maybe they just did not really allow much or give much on the other side of that coin and how frustrating it could have gotten in the past year. But there were subtleties, especially with Josh Allen, in the ways, you know, the body language and kind of the way he spoke about Stephon Diggs, and then the way he lit up talking about the potential of, you know, getting other receivers in the draft and Dalton Kincaid and how excited he was to draft Dalton Kincaid last year. And with McDermott, I think you saw that in the way he spoke so wistfully about Micah Hyde and Jordan Poyer and Tre'Davious White and not having them around anymore. And it just wasn't the same tone of voice and vibe when talking about Stephon Diggs. And what was not said, maybe said more than what was said about, you know, how the Bills feel going forward without Stephon Diggs on the roster.
It really falls in line with what Brandon Bean said the day Diggs was traded. A lot of the things that weren't said, there weren't a lot of bouquets being thrown It was respectful talk. Almost like, I mean, I'm not comparing the people, but the Pro Football Hall of Fame putting out its statement the day O.J. Simpson died. It was just like, these are things that he did. You know, here are some records that he broke, and we're not going to say anything else. Yeah, I took that away too. Those were my takeaways also. It was time to move on. I don't think they're going to lose any sleep over it. Had to be done. And, you know, Josh Allen probably has a bit of a chip on his shoulder. He has a lot more to prove. He wants to be, and he was doing it last season. As Devin McCourty pointed out to me in that story that I wrote, the Bills did a pretty good job of proving they didn't need Stephon Diggs when he was on the roster. So Josh Allen has this receiving core of Khalil Shakir and Dalton Kincaid, and adding Curtis Samuel to that. But Kincaid and Shakir with another year of experience, they're going to be implemented in the game plan from the get-go, as opposed to last season when they evolved into the offense. Joe Brady knows exactly what he has in Kincaid and Shakir. There are going to be plays drawn up specifically for them. And so they are going to unfold more as professional receivers and be that much bigger of a component of the offense and bigger weapons. Any other takeaways, Jonah, before we wrap up, maybe non-Diggs related from
Mr. Brandon Bean? And I think the hottest story about the Bills right now relates to the Stephon Diggs trade, and it's their wide receiver need and how aggressive they could be in moving up in the first round for a wide receiver. I mean, Brandon Bean, like any NFL general manager at this time, could be putting up a smokescreen, and you almost have to assume in some ways that he is. But if you do take him at his word for the things that he says, it sounds like he would be reluctant to give up next year's first round pick and maybe even this year's second round pick in order to get higher in the first round. And that I would think the Bills are more likely to make a small trade up to maybe get a receiver that they like a little bit earlier in the first round, but not a mega deal and putting multiple picks and multiple assets into one draft choice like the Bills did when they went for Sammy Watkins years ago.
Yeah, I think that the most provocative thing that Brandon Bean said, maybe provocative is not the right word, but the most enlightening thing that he said, but it was compelling, is that the Bills have the 28th overall pick, but Brandon Bean says they do not have a first round grade on 28 players. That means that to him, his pick is not a real first rounder in terms of what they're going to get for it. Therefore, maybe even a trade back or possible trade up. You can use your first round pick and hopefully get a little higher in the order. Or once it's time for them to pick, if they haven't been able to move up, they might be prone to moving back and gaining some, turning that pick into an additional second rounder or whatever else.
Yeah, and he also noted that they have more first round grades this year than last year. Kind of said that quickly in passing. Last year, they did trade up, I think, four spots. It was something like that for Dalton Kincaid. He had mentioned that if they didn't do that, they would have been probably trading down into the second round a year ago. I don't know what that means for this year. I think it might be, a lot of times people look at Brandon Bean's draft history and use that predictively, and then he does something a little bit differently, like when drafting Kyre Elam in the first round. So I don't know if what Brandon Bean has done in the past is really going to tell us what he does this year. But if you're doing that math and looking at last year's draft, what they did and what he said yesterday, you know, he says that they have higher number of first round grades on people, but they might find themselves in the same situation they were a year ago, deciding whether to go up a few spots or go all the way back into the second round.
Yeah, the calculus changes every year. You can't necessarily look at Brandon Bean's past, as you mentioned, like they say on the law firm commercials, past results do not predict future results or whatever the hell it is.
But he might have a new minority owner coming in before next Thursday.
Breathing down his neck.
Yeah.
But according to what the Bills said in their statement and my sources, whoever comes in will not have any say in what's going on with the team. Terry Pegula is still in charge. So we've come full circle. I need to wrap it up here. Joan, I know you have things to do to celebrate your birthday from yesterday. And maybe we'll cross paths a little bit later in the evening. But I want to thank you for jumping on here and thank everybody out there who's been listening. And also, please subscribe, comment, rate, give us a thumbs up, whatever the hell you're able to do. And drop a line underneath the YouTube or in the comment section underneath the podcast. We love to hear from you. And I read every comment. So please don't hesitate. Thank you for listening to Tim Graham and Friends, brought to you by CTBK, CPAs and Business Consultants.
The financial needs of a business go beyond tax and attest services. That's why CTBK goes beyond accounting services and offers outsourced solutions through their affiliation with CFO Solutions Plus. These additional services allow clients to focus on their operational and long-term strategic goals. Trust CTBK's outsourced solutions to provide cost-effective, value-added financial services tailored to your company's needs. Call CTBK at 716-630-2400. Again, 716-630-2400. Or go to ctbk.com to learn more about CTBK's outsourced solutions.